With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to the latest episode of the Championship Roundtable. I'm your host, Jake Jackman, and you can reach us at the show by emailing us championshiproundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm James Vickers. You can reach me on Twitter @_JamesVickers. I'm the Preston North End fan on the podcast. I write for a Preston North End fan blog, which is @DeepdaleDigest, where you can get player reviews, match reviews, and everything Preston, really.
And I'm another James to add to the confusion. I'm a QPR fan. You can get me on Twitter on Jimmy Evans. I also run We Are QPR TV, which you can see on YouTube, and also has a Twitter account.
Thanks so much for joining us today, guys. We'll start off making the rounds as usual, where each of us have a few minutes to discuss what's been happening at our clubs this week. It's been a double game week, so we each played two games. We'll start with you, James and Preston. We'll start there because you've had quite an interesting week. You had a really good victory during the week, and then you've sort of went to Elland Road yesterday and was on the end of sort of a similar sort of scoreline. Not as bad, but I mean, quite a convincing loss, despite the fact that from what I've read, you sort of had some good opportunities and maybe the scoreline didn't tell the whole story. What were your sort of views on the week?
Yeah, it's been an interesting week, really, Jake. We started off a great result at home to Bristol City. We've carried on where we left off, sort of really after the international break, not dropping many points at Deepdale. It was always nice to get one over on Bristol, especially with Bailey Wright in January leaving us to go to Bristol because he said he had a better chance of getting Premier League football with them, playing centre-back for them as well, and then putting five goals past them. So it was good one for the fans, sort of to get their own back on him a little bit. There was a lot of sort of taunting going on Twitter afterwards, but it's kind of how we've been at home this season, playing sort of exciting football, which is considering how we were when we were last in the Championship the last couple of seasons. It's quite a welcome sort of thing to have, playing attacking, free flowing football at home. We normally set up not to get beat. Maybe that's, especially last year, first season back in the Championship, first and foremost, you don't want to go down. So we've really kicked on at home this season. Fantastic again from start to finish. Barkhuizen and Callum Robinson, brilliant sort of up front, either side of Hugill. Barkhuizen again in the week, had goal against Bristol, and then he's capped his week off with Championship Player of the Month, which for Preston, it's great. We get sort of teams who expect to beat us, and then they're on Twitter saying, you know, can't believe we're not beating teams like Preston, which sort of does wind up a few Preston fans, but it's good that we kind of go under the radar and we can win games, especially like the Bristol one. So Barkhuizen's fully deserved that Player of the Month. He's been fantastic, getting five goals in four games. Came to us sort of November, but couldn't play until January, with him having played for Morecambe already this season. So he's been an absolute steal. Got him for pennies, really, and he's turned into a really valuable player for us. So that was during the week. Started off the week sort of as good as possible, and then we get to yesterday. The curse of Championship Player of the Month strikes again almost. Barkhuizen could have had a hat-trick in the first 20 minutes. He had a header from a yard or two out, which he headed straight at the Leeds keeper. He missed a one-on-one, and then he hit the crossbar. So it looked like it was going to be one of them days, and lo and behold, it turned out to be. Got beat 3-0. Wasn't really sort of a 3-0 game. It was quite an even game, but Leeds, with their experience and the money that they've spent, you'd expect them to take their chances when they get them. Bit surprised that we didn't really take our time and we put 5 past Bristol in midweek. But, you know, as the old cliche goes, we've used up our sort of our chances and sort of paid the price at Leeds. It's sort of disappointing to get beat there, especially Lancashire-Yorkshire rivalry, but as well with everyone around us winning, it sort of almost sort of signals the end of our playoff push. But with that, you know, the pressure's off us now. We've got some tricky away games coming up in Newcastle and Huddersfield, to name a couple. So we can go into them with no fear whatsoever now. Not going to get relegated, really, with us being ninth at the moment. So we can go, we can have a go, see where sort of the last five, six games takes us. And yeah, as I said, the pressure's off. Disappointing to get beat yesterday, but you know, second season back in the Championship, you want to consolidate your position and hope to build. And that's exactly what we've done this season. So no complaints from me. And hopefully we play some attacking, attractive football for the last few games.
Yeah, you said there that you think your playoff push is over. Although there's still a chance, it does look unlikely at this stage with Fulham and Sheffield Wednesday both going for that spot. What do you sort of want for the end of the season and going into the summer now as a Preston fan? Because you've made a lot of progress since returning to the Championship. Do you hope that you could continue that? And do you think that you've got the right men in place and sort of the squad to build from to continue pushing and maybe get a playoff spot next year?
Yeah, definitely. So we were sort of in a similar position. Last year we had, albeit sort of a rather weak one, not as strong as this season, sort of push for the playoffs. And we tailed off a bit towards the end of last season. The last few games after we couldn't mathematically get into the playoffs was a bit disappointing. So hopefully this season we just carry on playing as we have done. As you said, it's not mathematically impossible yet. But as I said, we've got to go to teams like Newcastle, Huddersfield. Wolves are always a tricky game, even though they're sort of lower down in the table. And then we've got Norwich at home, who beat Reading 7-1 yesterday. And they're, I think, a point below us and a place below us in the league at the moment. So they're sort of fighting to get as high up in the table as they can to finish off their season well. So hopefully, we go out, we play attacking football, which we have been doing when we've been getting results. When we seem to sit off and invite pressure, you know, especially the quality that's in this division, we seem to pay for it. So hopefully, the last few games, we can go out, have a go, sort of send the fans into the summer happy, and then build on that next season. I think Grayson's done a fantastic job. He's, every year he's been with us, he's improved on his previous league sort of season's finish. So hopefully next season, try and sort of mount a serious push for the playoffs and be in the position that a Fulham or a Sheffield Wednesday are sort of fighting for fifth or sixth come this time of the season, and actually in and around the playoffs rather than chasing with sort of a 5-point sort of differential. But I think key to that will be keeping players such as McGeady, who we've got on loan at the moment. He's out of contract at Everton in the summer, and he said that he'd love to stay if sort of the offer was right for him. Hopefully it is. I haven't seen him play sort of this well in quite a few years. He seems to be enjoying his football and turning up with a smile on his face, which for a player sort of getting on in years now, I'd imagine that's the most important thing for him. So yeah, hopefully keep him, develop the squad, which we have done. We signed some really exciting young players who will have another year of Championship football experience under their belt, and hopefully we can really kick on next season. Grayson's done fantastically well, and all faith in him to carry on where he's sort of taken us in the last few years. Yeah,
moving on to you and QPR now, James. A lot has gone on since you last came on the podcast. You sort of stabilised yourself in mid-table. You're not threatened with relegation, and Ian Holloway seems to have made a lot of progress. What are your sort of thoughts on QPR in the past week and what the future holds?
Hi, Jake. Yeah, it's interesting. I think you're absolutely right. I haven't been on for a bit, and it was worrying times last time. But then we went on a really spectacular run, kind of February and most of March, which kind of for a while we were kind of top of the form table, which was kind of, you know, you could see that the results were like the performances were turning, but the results weren't coming, and then they did, which is really encouraging. But and I think that we're safe. I mean, we got a 10-point gap on the kind of, you know, the last spot in the relegation zone. So for five games left, I think we're okay, although we're only in 16th. But, you know, the last three games we've had, admittedly, they've been bad. They've been hard games. Derby away, Villa away, and then Brighton on Friday night at Loftus Road. And we've lost them all. So basically, Holloway's just, it's like the pre-season. You get the feeling that Holloway's got a rough idea about what he wants from a squad, and he's just making quite a lot of changes within his midfield and his attacking line. So it's not, obviously, I guess, you know, three games in seven, eight days as well, you've got to kind of rotate. But that's certainly not helped performances. Interestingly, like a kind of Bailey Wright for you know, leaving Preston for Bristol. We took Luke Freeman from Bristol for $300,000, and he was nominated for Player of the Month. Didn't win it, Bark Huizen did, but he was an absolute steal. And that's who we've got next. And it's interesting at the moment because it's quite hard to make much of what is going on, because it's effectively, you're not quite sure what lineup you're going to get. There's a couple of gripes on a personal level that we seem to set up with five at the back, even at home. It just makes us quite, you know, it makes us fairly defensive. And I feel like it'd be nice to see us kind of just switch to something different. But, I mean, we tend to have kind of a different number when we have the ball. But when you initially see it set out, it's a 5-3-2, and then you're just hitting it to someone who's 6'6". Although Matt Smith has been fantastic in terms of his goal scoring, it's a little bit frustrating. But, I mean, you ask most QPR fans at the turn of the year, if they could be 16th from 50 points, they would have bitten your hand off.
Yeah, just on Holloway, because he started poorly. He went on that long run of losses and then he turned it around. And after what he's done with your club before, it's really good to see him do that, because it would have maybe been sour had you had to let go of him and replace him again this season. But do you think he's the right man going forward? Because he hasn't really been in the managerial game as much as he has been before. Yet he sort of had a lot of budgetary work. He maybe hasn't had a summer of recruitment for a while at least. Do you think that he is the right man going forward, or was he sort of somebody to come and steady the ship and then get somebody else in the summer?
Well, you know what, at the time he felt like the right choice, and actually after that kind of sticky patch at the beginning, he has sorted things out. And although you are bang on about kind of him not having a pre-season, but QPR's pre-seasons for the last kind of 5 or 6 years have tended to be disastrous, getting rid of 10 to 15 players every transfer window. And this is the first time, and this is due to kind of Holloway and Les Ferdinand. You know, QPR look like they might only need 5 or 6 players, which is still a lot, but by QPR standards, that's actually quite small fry. There's not that many people there, wage bill wise, that you feel like you need to shift on. Stephen Colker, it's probably kind of like the biggest, most obvious example. So I think he is the right man to take us forward. He's certainly galvanised the team and the squad. And there's a lot of kind of news coming from the club that, you know, this QPR have run some quite funny PR campaigns. We are together, the R obviously being like QPR. And you kind of, you know, the cynic in me never quite buys into that. But it does seem there's a real tight-knit togetherness with this squad, and Holloway is completely responsible for helping that kind of transition and making that happen. So I do think it will happen. It'll be interesting to see where he thinks we need to shape up and who he will ship out. But it's exciting because it's not the ridiculous overhaul of previous years.
Yeah, just moving on to Newcastle now. We've also had two fixtures this week, and it hasn't gone completely to plan, but the sort of table still looks good in our favour. We're still 10 points clear of Huddersfield because they lost Nottingham Forest at the weekend. They've got a game in hand, but all we need now is 3 victories in our last 5 games to secure promotion, which I think looks likely. And I think we can say that Brighton are probably going to go up as well, it's been decided fairly early for the Championship, but I think Brighton and Newcastle have been the 2 outstanding teams and they probably deserve it. We'll come more onto who will win the title later, but just on our week, we started off against Burton. Wasn't the greatest game. It was quite scrappy. Burton played well. I think they've done quite well this season. You know, they're difficult to beat. They gave Aston Villa a tough game at the weekend as well, and they got a draw there. So, I mean, they're not the easiest team, and hopefully they'll stay in the league. But that game really took the headlines for a different sort of reason. It wasn't because we won. I mean, we're pretty deserved winnings. Matt Ritchie got a winner. It was quite a good goal. But the main thing out of that game was the sort of penalty call that happened. I'm sure everyone's seen it now. It's gone around social media and it was quite ridiculous. Matt Ritchie scored a penalty that was rightly awarded him. From my point of view, I think Dwight Gale was fouled it was a penalty that should have been given. But then after Matt Ritchie scored the penalty, it sort of got ruled out, and then a free kick was given to Burton, which was quite... Yeah, I didn't understand it. It took me a while to even figure out why it could have been. I think they talked about Dwight Gayle impeding in the box. He sort of, but that happens all the time, and he didn't even do that. Then there was talk of Dwight Gayle fouling a Burton player. Like it was a farce, and it sort of shows some of the decisions you can get in the Championship. That's one of the main things I've learned this season, is that the officiating outside the Premier League is not that great. And when if we do get back into the Premier League as expected, I think I'm going to really appreciate the refereeing a lot more and maybe be a little bit less critical of them, because some of the refs of the Championship are awful. Like there was four of them there, four officials, and they came together and they still didn't make the right call, and even the FA could not defend them. It was ridiculous, and I'm very happy it didn't have any effect on the result, because it would have been absolutely ridiculous had we not won that game because of that decision.
Jake, was their punishment just a weekend off?
Yeah,
find hilarious.
Yeah, that's all I've seen anyway. They were all taking off their games this weekend. I'm not sure if they're going to have a sort of extended break from officiating. But, I mean, I don't understand how you could be a qualified referee and make a decision like that. Like, every single football fan watching that would have... Like, the thing about that decision wasn't that it was that he ruled out a penalty. It was the fact that, like, if you're going to make a big call and put yourself out there as a referee, you should do it because a call has to be made. If he made no call and there had been some sort of incident, it would never have been called up on. Like nothing would have happened. Had Dwight Gayle had sort of been encroaching in the area, and he hadn't have given anything and let the goal stand, no one would have mentioned a thing. It's the fact that they're making these decisions almost to make themselves centre of attention. And it was ridiculous.
Bizarre. I've never seen anything bizarre like it. It's very, very weird. And the refereeing team on the day could kind of wrap their heads around, or at one point say, hang on, has this ever happened before in any of the games you've been involved with? You know, it was like they had all left their bodies.
It was exactly like that. And the moment he made a decision, he had to stick with it. They might have even thought they were, it was ridiculous. And yeah, I'm sure we're not going to see another decision like that for a very long time. But it didn't matter in the end. We got the 3 points. Matt Ritchie scored quite a good goal. And, you know, we went back to top of the table until the weekend, where we went to play Sheffield Wednesday. And they are now the third team to do the double over us this season, after Blackburn and Fulham, which it's interesting that we're getting a lot of losses against the same teams from my perspective. I'm not understanding why that's happening. I think Sheffield Wednesday, like the game yesterday, they had a good game plan. They created a lot of chances, but I think their win was more down to us playing badly than it was them playing well. We made a lot of errors. Their goals came from two set pieces. I think on the first goal, four of our players were surrounding the goal scorer, and none of them put in a good challenge, and he managed to win the header. And it's things like that are really going to annoy Rafa Benitez. And then the second goal came from a long throw in, which was just very basic, and they shouldn't be scoring off goals of chances like that. But it happened. We went 2-0 down at that point. It was very unlikely that we're going to come back. The one moment of the game that was quite exciting for any Newcastle fan was when Jojo Shelvey pulled off that ridiculous effort from halfway. It was, if he hit the bar from halfway, and if that would have went in, like at that point, we probably would have went on and won the game. But it was just a ridiculous effort, and it shows the sort of technical ability he has. It's probably one of his better games yesterday. Probably the only player that played well for us. But, you know, we've gone back to second in the table. And as disappointing as that is, the main gap is that one to Huddersfield, and they are sort of choking quite badly. So I think we're going to be fine. I think we're going to go up possibly in the next couple of weeks, and then we can focus on next season. Dwight Gayle got injured again yesterday, which was disappointing, but... You know, we've done very well to get where we are, and we're only second to a team that is custom built for this league. Like, they've been at the top of the Championship for quite a few years now. I know they had one season where they flirted with relegation, but apart from that, they've been challenging for promotion, and they've got the stadium, the training ground, the manager, and the squad that is custom built for this league. So there's no shame in us finishing second to them if that is what happens. But there's a lot of football to be played, and I'm sure there's plenty of twists and turns in that race anyway. But we're just going to move into the topics for today. And the first one I'll ask you about is the sort of foreign managers that have come into the Championship and the success that they've had. Because when I looked at the league table earlier, I realised that five of the top seven clubs have foreign managers. And then the rest of the league below that all have English managers. So it's interesting to see the impact they're having. Do you think that's a trend that's going to continue over the coming years?
Yeah, it's been interesting, really. Especially being a Preston fan, we've tended to go with sort of, why I say English, British managers, especially over sort of the last 10, 15 years. So I've never really sort of had the sort of the chance to judge the foreign manager really from a Preston perspective. But sort of, as you said, definitely there must be something to it if sort of teams in sort of, as you said, in the top half are sort of predominantly managed by foreign managers. For quite a while, the Championship was kind of sort of quite a physical league. I think that's changing now. It's sort of almost with the amount of money that's been spent and that kind of thing becoming like an extension to the Premier League almost, especially with the quality teams that are in the division these days. So I think that definitely has something to do with it. And I think implementing sort of different ideas, different sort of managerial styles. You've seen it with Conte at Chelsea this season where sort of going to three at the back. It's been a revelation in the Premiership. Most managers are copying that now, and sort of Grayson's done it sort of with sort of somewhat success for Preston as well over the last couple of months as well. So I think different sort of styles, different formations, you know, bringing in, especially now, more foreign players coming into the league as well. That definitely has something to do with it. And I think over the next few years as well, especially with more foreign managers coming into the league and more money sort of been spent, we'll definitely see sort of a further influx of foreign managers. But from a Preston point of view, with especially player wise as well, we sort of had sort of a game plan almost for the last few years, which has been sort of homegrown and British with Grayson, tended to get players that have not really had a chance at Premier League clubs. So players like Daniel Johnson and Callum Robinson coming from Aston Villa when they were sort of in the Premiership. We've had Ben Pearson, who's come from Manchester United and done brilliant. And then sort of same with older players. We've had Aidan McGeady drop down a league and he's been fantastic as well. So I think it's finding that balance. I think you don't want to change sort of the DNA of a club too much, but obviously teams like Newcastle, they are Premier League clubs. Their position at the moment, I'd say otherwise with them being in the Championship, but you think Newcastle, you think Premier League. So I think definitely with the amount of money and that kind of thing that's going around, as I said, you know, different ideas been implemented, and sort of Rafa Benitez isn't a Championship manager, and that's not a knock on the Championship at all. But, you know, he's gone from managing Real Madrid in the Champions League. So it's no surprise to see Newcastle up there at the moment, especially with the squad they've got as well. And I think, yeah, sort of over the next few years, definitely we'll see sort of a greater influx of foreign managers, and it can only be a good thing for the league, really. Sort of the more foreign managers come in, there's a bit of sort of interest. Benitez from Spain, you're going to get sort of a bit more sort of Spanish attention in the media, so it can only be a good thing for the league, really, in my opinion.
I think James, I think what you said about the DNA of clubs is an interesting one. You might have kind of hit on a good, really good point there. Like when you look at, I mean, look, QPR obviously have, you know, the number one Bristolian in the world, but he played for us as well and has managed us before. And then, you know, you look at that kind of the teams, kind of, you know, team very local to us. Brentford have got Dean Smith, who was at Walsall, and those sort of mid-table teams in the Championship. Ipswich, obviously, again, English, obviously kind of just reinforcing the point of kind of how many of the kind of the top sites have foreign managers. But also a lot of the, you know, Fulham for a long time were a Premier League club and had foreign managers for quite a lot of that reign. I mean, I think when they went up, didn't they have John Tagana to get, or maybe it was Keegan and then Tagana to get them up. And obviously, you know, I think you could kind of almost exclude Newcastle from this conversation in the respect they're just an anomaly. Perhaps the example of Houghton. And, you know, every single bit of the club in terms of how they've prepped for going up is the model for a British or an English manager to follow to go up. But I don't think it's a bad thing at all. And also, I do think it hints towards the growing similarities between the Championship and the Premier League. I do feel like the Championship is veering closer towards that than it is the Football League, although the Football League would obviously have very different issues to say on that.
Yeah, it's interesting because the only reason I bring it up, because earlier in the season when there was a lot of managerial changes going on and the managers that were coming in were sort of the type of coaches that have been around the block, they've been up and down the leagues, Steve McLaren, Neil Warnock, Ian Holloway, you know, they're bringing in tried and tested managers. I guess you could say the same for Paul Lambert and recently Tony Mowbray as well. It's sort of they're sticking to safe options, and it's getting to the point where maybe these safe options are no longer safe. There's one or two that sort of, I guess, are the exceptions. Neil Warnock is always going to be a very good championship manager. But if you look at what Steve McLaren did at Derby, he last time he was at the club, he had that really good sort of year and a half of it. But this time it just went downhill straight away. And it could be maybe that the championship is developing as a league. Not even just Rafa Benitez. I guess I just sort of exclude Newcastle from this as well. But if you look at Slavisa Jokanovic, he's had managed two championship clubs. He got Watford up, and now he's, you know, made Fulham into one of the best teams to watch in the division, and one that has a very good chance of making the playoffs after flirting with relegation last season. And he had to completely rebuild that squad with McCormack and Dembele leaving, and he's done a great job there. And the same could be said of Carlos Carvajal. Before he came to Sheffield Wednesday, he was around quite a few clubs. I think he never stayed at a club longer than sort of 2 years. He was one of those type of managers, and he's managed at quite a few clubs. But he's turned Sheffield Wednesday into a very, very good team. He understands the division. He's got the right sort of players in. And they're set to, you know, maybe get another playoff spot for the second year running. And then there's obviously David Wagner. You know, these coaches, I think, are changing it. They're making it a lot more tactical. And it's not maybe enough to have the right sort of player now. You have to have the right system as well to do well in this league. Mick McCarthy is a great example of a manager who hasn't adapted. Last season, Ipswich finished seventh. And this season, they're not doing anything at all. I just think it's going to be interesting to see develop. And I can't remember who said it on this show, but somebody did come on and say they think eventually the championship is going to become Premier League 2. And I completely agree with that. I think that's where it's going. And it's very similar in sort of how it's developing. I think there's going to be a lot more foreign talent coming into the championship. Maybe as the Premier League gets better and more players come to the Premier League, then the talent will filter down and you'll get better players in the championship as well. So it's definitely one to keep an eye on.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I want to ask a question to you, James, about QPR. You've had foreign manager in Jeremy Floyd Hasselbaink, and now you've gone back to Ian Holloway. Do you think it's interesting to sort of note the difference between the two? Do you think that Jeremy Floyd Hasselbaink, although foreign, although he is Dutch, you know, do you think he was quite English in the way he managed, or did he try and bring in different methods and they just didn't adapt to the championship?
That's a really good question. What was interesting with his style of play, kind of tactically, in a funny way, you know, very quickly on Holloway, he signed someone that's 6'6", and we lump it up to him quite a lot. And it's been quite effective. If you wanted to really kind of nutshell the English 4-4-2, although we don't play that, and that'd be doing Holloway a disservice. But Hasselbaink, it was really interesting. He was very oddly rigid. He would play 4-2-3-1, very occasionally 4-3-3, but almost always 4-2-3-1. And it was quite clear from instructions, and this got leaked out afterwards, that players were told to operate within a 15 to 20 yard box. And each of them had this sort of box within an area of which they could operate, which I think is a Dutch model. So he tried to implement that. And what it made us was just it made us hard to beat, but just not very exciting. But then maybe that showed the fact that Hasselbank didn't have a hell of a lot of experience. You know, obviously he took Burton up, but he took over from Gary Rowett, and everyone knows how great a job Gary Rowett seems to be doing wherever he goes. But QPR are terrible for picking managers. We tend to go for flavour of the month. We were looking at getting Clement, who's ended up at Swansea, and that didn't happen because Clement's dad played for QPR. And then obviously we had Mark Hughes, Harry Redknapp. Harry Redknapp got us promoted. I mean, you know, has he had a job since? I can't. Not a club game. But Hasselbank, it just didn't seem to work. But I think that was more down to his personality in terms of his kind of rigid, kind of stubborn attitude in terms of he really wanted to implement a style and a system of play. He may not have had the players to make it happen. And his linchpin in that formation that he had, Cherry, really kind of just fell completely by the wayside after Hasselbank departed and is now playing in China, which kind of says so much about modern football.
Yeah, and it's not only the QPR example of Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank, and maybe he didn't have the experience or maybe the know-how of how to give the system he wanted, but there's been other examples of I don't want to just point out the foreign managers that have done well and suggest that's the way to go, because looking down the list of the managerial changes that have happened this year, there have been quite a few unsuccessful foreign managers in this league, and it's maybe difficult
GM Franco Zola.
Gianfranco Zola heads that list, but there's also been Walter Zenger at Wolves. They went for him and then opted to go back for a more traditional British manager.
Forgot he was even there, Zenger. I forgot. The Championship is so long. It feels like two seasons. You know, I completely forgot Walter Zenger was even at Wolves.
Yeah, and then there's not only Walter Zenger that you may have forgotten. There's Roberto Di Matteo, Philippe Montagnier. You know, there's been quite a lot of managers in this league, and they haven't adapted. And it could be that maybe the ones operating at the top is just the year that they're doing well, and then next year it will be British managers doing well again. It's difficult. Maybe it's just finding the right guy, because Gary Rowett is obviously the right guy to manage in this division. He could probably take on any of the 24 jobs and do well in them. You know, he's turning Derby around and they've got a late shot at the playoffs. He did excellently at Birmingham, and now they look like they could potentially go down if it continues going the way it is. So it's interesting to look at, and hopefully there's going to be more British managers coming to the league, because I think that's what we all want. But at the same time, it's difficult for clubs, especially those with ambitions to go up and maybe those that have struggled to find the right manager. Derby would be a great example. They now have that in Rowett. Nottingham Forest is another one of teams that have been in this division quite a long time. Ipswich, I think, have been in this division longer than any other team. So it may be interesting for them to look maybe more down the foreign route and try something different than to stick with the same thing.
Just a brief aside, there in the kind of, you know, the East Anglian derby, it was a while ago now, but I think it was something like in the 15th or 16th minute, all the Ipswich fans started clapping. No, the Norwich fans started clapping, and then the Ipswich fans joined in. But what they didn't realise is the Norwich fans commemorating Ipswich's 16 years in the Championship. Which I thought was one of the funniest things I've seen fan-wise this season. But I think there might be something about the structure of the club, the DNA thing that James was saying earlier, because I think, didn't Di Matteo get West Brom promoted? Or am I just remembering that as a kind of a bit of a brain fart?
No, he did. That was the last time we were in the Championship as well, so yeah.
There might just be something in terms of just everything being the right place. And there are exceptions, like you said, like Gary Rowett. And I mean, you know, not quite as good as Grayson has, but, you know, Brentford don't even have an academy set up anymore. The fact that Dean Smith's come from Walsall to them, and, you know, pains me to say it because they are rivals, but he's done a great job for them, Dean Smith.
Yeah, there's other ones as well. Paul Heckingbottom at Barnsley. You know, I think he's just the right fit for that club. It's about finding that. But it's just interesting that there is that theme at the top of the league at the moment. And it will be interesting to see if it does maybe become a little bit more tactical in seasons to come as some money continues to come sort of down from the Premier League. But we'll just quickly move on to the next topic, because it is one that is being hotly debated among Newcastle fans at the moment, as you would expect, as we move down to second position in the league. How important do you two think winning the championship title is from this position for Newcastle and Derby? Do you think it matters a great deal?
Personally, I don't. Sort of, it's nice to win the league and, you know, get a trophy and go up. I wouldn't say it's sort of the end of the world if you don't win the title, because obviously you're going up anyway. But sort of, yeah, you'd be silly not to want a trophy at the end of the season, especially as James was saying, the championship does feel like sort of two seasons at times, playing 46 games. So it's good for your hard work paying off. But obviously, I think we can all agree Newcastle and Brighton are both sort of, barring a disaster collapse in the last few games, going to go up. Personally, I think Brighton have been a bit more consistent, so I can probably, out of the two, see them winning the league, especially with Dwight Gayle being injured. I'm not sure how long he's out for, Jake, but he's been sort of your main attack this season, so I think Brighton will probably win it. But, you know, from a Newcastle point of view, you'd like to think they'll be fine in the Premiership next season. I think when they went up last time, I think you finished top half, so especially with the money that you'll spend and Rafa Benitez as well in charge, I can't see you sort of struggling too much when you go back up. So personally, yeah, it's nice to win a trophy, but I can't sort of see it having too much of an impact, really.
I think it weirdly means it would mean more to Brighton winning it than Newcastle. I don't know if you agree or disagree with that, Jake, but because, you know, Newcastle just simply was get back to the Premier League this year, and, you know, you're pretty much there. Whereas Brighton have kind of just geared up for a push, and it's like, obviously I saw them play on Friday, and the way support they brought was fantastic to Loftus-Road, and just, as you said, they have crafted that squad, the stadium, to a T, to kind of get ready for this position. So I think it feels like a kind of, you know, kind of the completion of a plan there. Whereas Newcastle, you know, who knows how Brighton will fare next season? I think a while ago on this pod that I thought Brighton would do it full consistency, and I think they still will. But then you'd think next season with Rafa in charge, Brighton and Newcastle might be dealing with slightly different kind of stratospheres. But I think it matters less. So, but you may completely disagree. And when QPR won the league, I loved it. But, you know.
My thinking on it is that I don't think it matters a great deal, purely because the main thing is the Premier League. And when the Premier League season kicks off, there's not going to be a lot of people discussing, oh, Newcastle won the league, Brighton won the league, or whoever goes up through the playoffs. So they went up through the playoffs. They were just three promoted teams at the end of the day. That's what they're seeing as next season. But the reason I want Newcastle to do it, of course I want them to do it, because you want to finish as high as possible and you want to win the league if you've got the opportunity. But it's the fact, I think it might be written off by clubs, fans of other clubs and other people in the media who haven't watched Newcastle a great deal and maybe don't have that knowledge of the championship, that it would be a failure if Newcastle don't win the league, purely because of the finances, Rafa Benitez, things like that. And it might be, you know, it's just an annoying thing that would be following us around for a while if we didn't win it. I think it would certainly be a black mark on Benitez, and people might think that he'd failed. Although, if you'd had any knowledge in the championship, if you look at where Villa and Norwich are, Rafa's done an absolutely superb job, and second would be an absolute fabulous achievement. Brighton, as I said earlier, they are custom built for this league. They, in any other season, they would be running away with the league on their own, and they'd be. I think it's remarkable that there's two clubs in the league this season that have the points that they do. I don't think it's that common. I think any other season, Huddersfield probably would have been promoted automatically. It's just that they've got two teams, one of them that's come down from the Premier League and has got the money and Rafa Benitez and things like that, and the other that has just been building for this for the last three or four seasons and now have everything in place to do it. So I want to do it just so I don't want that following us around. And I still think we will. I think Brighton, I've got a couple of difficult games and I think we'll finish strongly. We normally, after losing the game, we normally go on quite a good run, and I think we'll finish maybe not win our last five games, but I think we'll win probably four of them, maybe. And I think we should win it. But it's the fact it would be if you know what I mean, it would be annoying. And people, you know what the media and other supporters, they would look at that as a failure for Newcastle. And I don't think it is. I think for Brighton, this is their apex. They've been wanting to get to the Premier League, and this is their achievement. This is the end goal. And then they're going to look to do what they can after that. But for Newcastle, this is the first step of a long, long journey, and getting to the Premier League is that main point. So it doesn't matter to me as a fan, but it matters to me just because I don't want that following us around for any length of time, because it could become an unwanted bit of baggage if we don't win this league. Whereas if we do, then it will quickly be forgotten about. But just moving on to player watch for this week, you can talk across the two fixtures this week. That is completely fine. Who impressed and disappointed for your club this week? We'll start with Preston and you, James, on this one.
Yeah, it's been quite interesting, really. The one who impressed sort of the most is the one who's also disappointed. So it's a bit of a weird one, really. As I said earlier, Barkhuizen scored and got an assist in the 5-0 victory over Bristol. And then during the week as well, he won Player of the Month for the Championship, which is the second month in a row that a Preston player's won it, with McGeady winning it in February. So his week started off fantastically. It couldn't have got any better, really. And then you go into yesterday's game against Leeds, and as I said, he could have had easily a hat-trick in sort of the first 20 minutes. My brother went to it, and he said that sort of any other day, Preston would have been a couple of goals up in the first 20 minutes. But, you know, you can't really sort of get on him too much. He's been absolutely fantastic for us since he's come into the team. So it'd be sort of wrong to highlight him in a negative sense against Leeds. So the other one that I'd say to go with, the one who's disappointed me the most, would be Baptiste. He's come back into the team in the last couple of games after sort of an injury layoff, and he looks a little bit off the pace still. I think sort of with the injury sort of problems we've had at right back this season, Callum Wood's out for the season, and we've had Tyus Browning on loan from Everton, who's been out for a few weeks as well now. Baptiste has shifted to right back when he's come in. Yesterday, he got sent off an off-the-ball incident, which, speaking to people at the game, I think he sort of kicked out, similar to how Beckford did earlier in the season, to a Leeds player who's on the floor right sort of under the nose of the linesman, which, you know, especially to do it anywhere on the pitch, but especially right in front of the linesman, is just asking for trouble. So he was sent off there. And after that, we were 2-0 down at that point. There's no coming back into the game. He sort of lost his man a few times, which led to a few Leeds chances. And he just seems like he could do with a bit more sort of training before we'd thrown him back in, especially away at Leeds, which is one of the hardest places to go in the Championship. And similar to him, Marnet Vermeil, who played as well, his first game since, I think it's sort of November time, he got thrown back into the team yesterday and again looked off the pace. So especially, as I said, going to Leeds with two defenders that they're thrown back in after sort of lengthy injury layoffs, it's asking for trouble. But, you know, I can't really fault the team. They've been fantastic all season. Hopefully it's just a blip, this defeat to Leeds, as was shown sort of earlier in the week when we put five past Bristol. We're a good attacking team. So, yeah, hopefully, as I said, it's a one-off. And obviously Baptiste won't be playing for a couple of games now, but Vermeil, a bit more match fitness under his belt, and hopefully he can put that right when we play Huddersfield on Good Friday.
Yeah, the same question for you, James. Who impressed and disappointed for QPR this week?
Well, I've got an interesting one here. Massimo Luongo impressed against Aston Villa again, kind of man of the match in a lot of the reports. And I wasn't there at that game, but I was there on Friday. And it's really funny. I have found that this season he's gone backwards a little bit since Holloway came in. I don't quite know why, because I feel like I'm kind of in the minority here. I'm just not seeing something that a lot of other people are seeing. So although he clearly, you know, pleased a lot of people, for me, weirdly, he disappointed. Perhaps my expectations are a bit too high of him. In terms of other players, Luke Freeman, who I mentioned earlier, he had a cameo on Friday for kind of the last 20-30 minutes. And was fantastic. He really did help shape the game, and he had a really good game against Villa as well. So he would be my personal choice. And then disappointed, it's more slightly bewildered. I don't really know what's going on. It's Ravel Morrison. Like, there's times when you see this guy play, and he hasn't played a lot for us, but obviously he's been at QPR before, and it just all looks a bit too easy for him. And then you wonder if that has kind of just impacted his general drive and play when he's on the pitch. And then in the formation that we were playing, he was kind of the deepest of the midfield three, where you're like, you want him further up. And then he got substituted for Freeman, and Freeman became the creative outlet, but did play further up the pitch. But it's more sort of disappointing, yes, but also just bewildered, because when we went 2-0 down, Morrison suddenly seemed like he had a bit of bite and a bit of fight and did a couple of step overs and looked like, oh, hang on, this is the guy that, you know, Paul Pogba looked up to and Lazio had. And then, you know, he got substituted, and I just get the feeling that he probably won't get offered a contract after the season. It's just very weird. I don't know if what your guys' take is on Morrison. Just be interested to hear kind of thoughts from outside, if you have one at all.
Well, he's very talented. I remember when he was at QPR the first time, I was always impressed when I saw him, and then at West Ham as well. But I don't know. I don't really think he's worth the effort at this point. I haven't watched a great deal of him since he came back to QPR. I know it didn't really work out for him in Italy. I don't think anyone really expected it to. I guess it's a playoff for it's sort of a trade off for QPR. Is he worth the money? Is there any chance you could get even like 50% out of him? Because if you can, he's definitely worth it in this league. I think you saw what Adil Terat did for you a few years ago. He could be a similar sort of player. And I don't think QPR can maybe attract the talent that he has as easily as you that easily. I mean, if you could get his talent working, it would be good for you. But I don't know if it's difficult, isn't it? It's always difficult for players like that.
Absolutely. You're completely right there. And you QPR, the position that QPR are in. And it might be a bit like McGeady as well. The club's sort of got to take a chance on him and hope that you can get a tune out of them. But you do wonder if I think Terap's in Italy now, at Genoa maybe, but you do sort of just wonder if his time is up. So it was disappointing, but more in a bewildering way, because you can see it's all there, but it's just not all going to come together.
Yeah, I just don't think it's probably worth the effort, but yeah, I guess... It's difficult, isn't it? I don't know it as well as you do, but I wouldn't say that he's probably not worth it at this point. Although a good example of somebody I know a little bit more about is Niall Ranger. Obviously, he was at Newcastle, had a lot of talent, had run-ins with the law, and now he seems to be at Southend in League One, and he scores quite a few goals. So he's not reversible. He's getting to the age where maybe it might all click for him. There's been examples in the past of players that it just does click for. Maybe it's worth another season, but I personally wouldn't want him at my club. But
you've got Shelby, so you know you've got and Iosi Perez. He's your enigma.
Yeah, we've got enough as it is. I think Shelby's turned it around. Shelby's a good example of somebody who has turned it around. Although I don't think he had the problems that Raval does, but moving on to for Newcastle now for player watchers, I do realise we're running out of time. The person that impressed this week is probably Matt Ritchie. I think he played really well against Burton and won us the points alone and recovered well from the penalty miss. So that was really, really good to see. I think he's probably been our player of the season, and it's easy to see that he's going to go on and do well in the Premier League next season as well. For disappointed, there's a few. I think Jamal Lascelles is a particular one, purely because I just don't understand what's going to happen with him next season. I think giving him the armband has really chained him to Rafa. Those two are chained. Like, you can't drop Jamal Lascelles. You can't take the captaincy off him. He's so young, only 23. You can't take that captaincy off him now. But he is easily the weak link in our back four. And he's not great on the ball. He makes a lot of mistakes. He's been making a lot of mistakes this year in the Championship. So what that means for next season, I don't know. Because if he's making as many as he is this season, I can only think he's going to be a weakness again next year. And that is a worry. He was probably to blame for both of the goals yesterday. He's a great leader. He speaks well. He's connected with the fans. He's got a lot of potential. He's certainly got the potential to maybe even play for England one day. And he's at the right place to do that at Newcastle under Benitez. I think Benitez will improve him, but it's whether he's going to improve him at the rate that we are improving as a club? That's the big question for me. And I think there's a lot of talk of giving the captaincy to Richie, but you can't take a captaincy away from a 23-year-old. You can't. That would absolutely destroy him. I think we are stuck with him as captain. I say that as a negative thing. I'm very happy for him to be captain. He's a great captain, but what he's doing on the pitch that is a concern, and he really needs to work on that. We've got the right manager to do it. I'm sure Rafa knows where he's going to go, and I'm sure Jamal Lascelles is going to be fine in the long run. It's just a concern based on yesterday, where we're so close to next season now, and there's only 5 more championship games to go. So if we're going to be very quickly into pre-season, then the Premier League season, if we do get there as expected. So, it's a worry. I think that's the one person I'm worried about going into next season, because I know that the rest of the weak links in the team, we will strengthen. But I think that is one that we just can't do it. You can't drop your captain. You can't take it off him. So, he was probably the disappointment for this week. But before we finish for today, I just want to quickly preview our matches coming up on Friday. I think they're on Friday this week. So we'll start with you on this one, James, in QPR. You've got a trip to Bristol City. So they had a good win at the weekend, but Preston beat them in the week last week. So they're definitely a team that concedes a lot of goals, and they're very inconsistent. They've still got the manager that I think they should have sacked about 3 months ago. So it's a winnable game. How do you see this one going? Do you think QPR will get the win, or do you think it's going to be a tricky one?
Yeah, you're absolutely right there. QPR seems to be a great team for a new manager bounce. And I was thinking after that result last week, I was like, oh, Johnson's not going to be there when QPR go to Ashton Gate. But he's still around. So that fills me with odd confidence. I think if Holloway stops trying to experiment and just sets out his stall and picks his best team, because we do set up quite tough to beat, especially away from home. I think that kind of 5-3-2 that switches into sort of something, a 3-5-2, 4-3-3 when we have the ball, works quite nicely. And obviously, you know, Tomlin's a creative player, but he can blow hot and cold. So just as long as you can stop their goal machine, Abraham, then I think you've got a good chance. And it'd be nice for QPR to just edge over the 50 points and get to 53. Not that I think we should really be looking over our shoulder, but, you know, but it would do. But that being said, they have a lot more to play for than we do with this game. But I mean, Holloway is a Bristolian. He's a Bristol Rovers man. He managed and played for them as well. So I'm sure he'll be keen to get one over kind of on his City rivals.
And moving to Preston now with you, James, you've got a difficult trip to Huddersfield, although the Wheels have gone off their title push or their promotion push recently. Do you think there's a good opportunity for Preston to win this one and keep your slight playoff hopes alive?
Yeah, as I said, we can go into the game without any fear, really. No one expects us really now to get into the playoffs. I think it will be out of Fulham and Sheffield Wednesday, unless, you know, like a Reading sort of go into free fall now. So Huddersfield aren't in the best of form. Sort of having a look at their form earlier before I came on here, they've only got one win in the last four, and they've conceded 7 goals in them 4 games, which, when you think the teams that they've been playing, I think 3 of the 4 teams that they've played are sort of in the bottom 5 or 6. So they are shipping goals at the moment, and even though it wouldn't sort of prove it yesterday away at Leeds, we are a team that is kind of better suited away from home. We set up sort of away from home not to get beat and try and hit teams on the break with the pace that we have, sort of especially in our front three. So it should be an entertaining game. Really rate Wagner as a manager, sort of following German football with Dortmund. I know a lot about him from his time there managing their sort of their B team. So he's done a fantastic job for them. But, you know, fingers crossed we can sort of do Newcastle a bit of a favour and sort of peg them back a bit for you to get promoted in the next couple of weeks and keep our slim playoff hopes alive. And, you know, if we don't get in the playoffs, so be it. But it'll be nice to finish the season on a strong sort of run and then sort of take that into next season and kick on and find that consistency that we've sort of lacked this season to mount a serious sort of playoff push. So if we want to sort of finish as high as we can, obviously these are the games that we've got to be winning. So, as I said, go into it with no fear. Not sort of, obviously I want us to win, but wouldn't be the end of the world if we get beat, especially at Huddersfield with third. No one expects us really to get a result. So yeah, go in with no pressure and see how it goes.
Yeah, finally, we've got Leeds at home on Friday. It's going to be live on Sky. So I think we've lost most of the games we've been on Sky, or at least most of our losses have come when we've been on Sky. So it's going to be an interesting one. Leeds will be well up for it. And it's a good chance for them to show what they could do in a Premier League fixture. It's going to be sort of builders out on Sky, the two clubs that could be playing in the Premier League. And it's a Premier League stadium as well. Newcastle, we've been in the Premier League for a long time. It's going to be a game that it's going to show us a lot about Leeds more than it's going to show us about Newcastle. I think it'll be interesting to see if they can deal with that and come away from home and get a result. But putting my Newcastle supporters hat on, I think it's going to be... We've struggled at home this season and we've struggled on Sky, which makes me think this is going to be a difficult one. But at the same time, I don't think we've lost two games in a row very often. I think at least after each loss, we normally come back with a win. And I think Rafa will get the players up for it. They know that... We'll know what Brighton have done at that stage of the day. So we'll know what we have to do to see sort of keep in touch with them, or maybe we'll have the opportunity to go top. So it's going to be an interesting one. We've got Gale out, but I think Daryl Murphy has done very good when he's come in to fill in for Gale. I think when Gale was out injured, we didn't lose once. I might be wrong on that. I don't think we did. I think he was back for the Fulham game. So we've coped quite well without him. And I think Murphy's is a very good championship strike. He'll be absolutely fine in this game. I'm going to predict us to win. I think we normally come back and we win after a loss, and I think we're going to do that. I don't think we're going to be as bad as we were yesterday. So yeah, I'm going to predict a narrow 2-1 win. I think it's going to be a difficult game. I think Leeds are going to be really up for the game, but yeah, I can see us coming out on top. But with that, we are now out of time. So if you guys want to tell people where they can reach you or anything you're involved in, now would be a good time.
Yeah, so as I said before, I'm James Vickers. You can follow me on Twitter at underscore James Vickers.
Hi, yeah, James Evans. You can follow me on Twitter at Jim E. Evans. Also run We Are QPR TV, which is WQPR TV on Twitter. Also occasionally involved in the QPR podcast, Open All Ours. So if you really want to hear or see more of me, those are the places to find me.
Yeah, and my Twitter account is at Jake Jackman with two N's. You can get me on EPL Index and the Boot Room. They're the two sites I mainly write for, so check both of them out. I just want to thank James and James for coming on today. It's been a good one. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we hope you join us again soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.